Hey everyone, Rich here. When I was 10, I remember heading outside to play some football with some friends down the street. As I walked outside my front door, there was a car parked next to the curb, right in front of my house. It was certainly odd. I knew the cars in my neighborhood, and this was not one of them. To add to the mystery, there was a man sitting in the driver's seat, staring at the park across the street. I went back inside the house and reported the suspicious man to my parents. With my investigative work complete, I left to meet my friends. While I was gone, my dad made a few calls and determined it was an undercover police officer. How cool! Being an 80s kid, I was obsessed with crime dramas, and especially Magnum P.I. The fantasy of hunting for bad guys while wearing jeans and a Hawaiian shirt, all while living rent-free on the grounds of a palatial estate in Oahu. It seemed like the dream job. But although reality is a little less glamorous, detective work in real life is serious business. In this episode, we're bringing back Tom Chavez, a California-based private investigator who brings the same passion to solving crimes as all the Hollywood legends did, from Magnum to Starsky and Hutch to Simon and Simon. Tom is a one-of-a-kind who feeds off of big challenges. We spend quite a bit of time on financial crimes in this interview, but we also managed to sprinkle in some other areas as well. And it's a testament to Tom's remarkable versatility in the field of PI work. But as always, the goal of this episode and the podcast is to arm you with the knowledge needed to help you live more safely and privately. You're listening to Privacy Files. This episode is brought to you by Anonymy Labs, makers of MySudo, the world's only all-in-one privacy app, and Sudo Platform, the cloud-based platform companies turn to for seamlessly integrating identity protection solutions into their software. And have you heard about the MySudo web browser extension? Breaking your online data trail just got way easier. To learn more, visit mysudo.com. That's mysudo.com. Tom, welcome back to Privacy Files.
Thank you, Rich. So great of you to have me join again. I'm excited. How many people have you had on the show twice?
And externally, you are the first person to return. And it is definitely because of the popular feedback, for sure. Everybody loved your last episode.
Can you hear that? That is the audience giving a standing ovation right now. I just mentally envisioned that.
Yeah, it was amazing. I mean, from start to finish, and matter of fact, if you look at the audience retention stats, it pretty much stays level throughout the entire episode. So you held everyone's attention. That's hard to do. So congrats.
Wow. Yeah. I am absolutely humbled. And now my business partner is going to be encouraging me to actually make our own podcast or to be featured on other people's podcasts more often. Yeah, thank you so much for having me. It's a great pleasure to be here.
No, thank you. I'm glad to know you. This is all interesting, fascinating stuff. I'm definitely prepared to learn some new things. But let's start off with first, how are things going over at Dark Horse Intelligence?
So with everything in my life, I am absolutely blessed. My business partner, Richard, and I, we are absolutely blessed. I'm very much a cup is half full kind of person. I don't ever like to think that because there's bills, because there's a tremendous amount of casework, try to take everything one day at a time. I try to be very thankful about everything. I am extremely thankful that I am blessed with a beautiful wife who allows me to be who I am and to be such a great investigator. I work 24/7 around the clock. You'll find me up at 6 in the morning, in the afternoon, in the middle of the night. And I could be either online or racing around town somewhere. Recently, I was at a location here in Fresno responding to a burglary in progress and was with about 10 patrol units from the Fresno Police Department, paddy wagon, a canine, and it was exciting. It was absolutely exciting. And that's my average everyday type of event. I'm very blessed. I have great clients who love our work and they pay us handsomely to do so.
Yeah. So as a private investigator, you're involved in many different areas. It sounds like you keep it extremely diverse and active. And one day it doesn't look like the next. But we wanted to spend some time talking about in this episode is in the area of banking and financial fraud. And that sounds like that's one of your core areas.
Ooh, I love that. That sends shivers down my spine every time I think about it. It's just, I have many areas of specialties, but financial fraud is just one of those where I have an immense amount of skill because it combines a lot of different skill sets that I am very proficient in.
Yeah, I guess from just traditional branch banking to credit cards to Bitcoin, you've been doing this for a while now. Just how prevalent is financial fraud?
So we could thank a lot of the companies that are out there today, from Home Depot to Macy's to just about any Fortune 500 company that has had lacks security or has not implemented security sufficiently to protect its customers. And we can also thank the financial institutions that are have varying degrees of layers of security. Depending on how large the financial institution is, will dictate oftentimes how great their security protocols are and how difficult it is to overcome them. Now, with that said, there's also the vendors that sell security solutions to these financial institutions. I'm not an expert on how those agreements come into play, but sometimes these things are oversold. For example, some financial institutions are starting to use voice recognition technology to authenticate its customers. So you'll call in to your financial institution and then the automated system will tell you to use VoicePrint. That's one of the brands that are being sold out there. And it will ask to repeat a phrase, my VoicePrint is my password, or my voice is my password. And then it will authenticate you without requiring the use of a PIN number. Okay. And when it originally came out, it had potential. I mean, maybe there is still some potential, but there's always a bypass method. And that is the problem with a lot of security products, is that there's always an option to bypass. Okay. In addition, there are deep fakes now. There is tremendously great products that will clone anyone's voice, whether it's the president, whether it is the janitor working at a school. Your voice can now be cloned. My voice, your voice, anybody's voice. And it's already been proven that those deepfakes can be used to authenticate you through these voice print technologies being used at financial institutions. But even if you're not skilled enough to use a free tool that's readily available online to bypass that, you can always opt to not use voice print. And then if you have enough information about a subject, you can go ahead and social engineer your way into someone's financial account. Everything is about having enough information.
You're scaring me, Tom.
Again, this is just one of those things that I know a little bit more than I should know about, but I love talking about it. I will talk all day about it.
So just by the nature of me doing this podcast, my voice is out there. It's incredibly easy now for somebody to clone that.
Yes, absolutely. Again, we can thank a lot of the companies out there who's in possession of people's PII, their personal identifying information, whether it's your phone number, whether it's your email address, whether it's your account numbers, your bank account numbers, credit account numbers, anything and everything that's related to you that someone else is in possession of. Those things are exposable if proper security protocols are not implemented and followed. It's not enough to have those things implemented. Customer service has to continually follow those guidelines and not allow themselves to be social engineered.
Let's take a quick break for this message from our sponsor.
Not again. I can't find it anywhere.
What's got you so frustrated?
Hi, Bob. Just trying to find an important email, but my inbox is a disaster. It's all ads and spam. It's exhausting.
Sounds like you need somewhat of an inbox intervention. Have you heard of MySudo?
MySudo? No, what's that?
It's an awesome app where you can create a pseudo. It's kind of like a digital alias. Each of these pseudos comes with its own email to help you organize your digital life. It's the perfect tool to keep your personal and work emails spam-free.
So what you're saying is I can use one of these pseudo emails and never have to worry about spamming up my personal or work email?
Yep. Plus, it's super secure. You should download it.
Downloading as we speak. You are a lifesaver.
Don't let spam emails take over your life. Reclaim your inbox with MySudo. Download MySudo today and start your journey to a clutter-free digital world. Visit MySudo.com and remember, stay private.
Yeah, so I guess one of the things that I've heard about when it comes to the area of branch banking is people creating fake applications to create accounts, whether it's credit card accounts, applications for loans, or just banking accounts in general. It seems like that's a huge area of fraud where some banks will even, by default, if there's anything that's off, they just automatically cancel your account. I remember a few years ago, I applied to create a checking account in a major bank I won't name. Everything was fine from what I could tell. I answered all the questions correctly, but I guess there was just one little tiny piece that didn't quite match what they had on their records, whether they were using TransUnion or whoever to help verify, and they denied my account. And I just couldn't. And every time I tried to call them and get a hold of them to fix the issue, I just finally gave up. It was, the standards, I guess, are really high right now, which makes me wonder, how can so many fraudulent accounts still get created today in the banking space?
Sometimes those security protocols are effective. It depends on what type of different layers of security a consumer is using while establishing a new account at a different financial institution. So based that you and I are both privacy advocates, we utilize a variety of different tools while we're online. Some of those are anonymous email services like MySudo. Some of them are virtual phone numbers, such like MySudo. Even though those are extremely well-regarded tools that we both use routinely, and that I also highly advocate for all of our customers to utilize and for the general public, a lot of financial institutions haven't caught up to the fact that these are things that should be utilized by its customers worldwide. And the reason for that is because they want to be able to effectively track and authenticate people. And that is by using cell phone records to be able to understand that this was a United States cell phone telephone number, maybe from, like, say, T-Mobile, Verizon, AT&T. It's one of their ways that they're able to see that you might be a real person and not a fraudster. But that's a misconception. And I think it's very short-sighted of these financial institutions, because it does open up avenues for fraud for people that are still using cell phone numbers that are easily traceable back to the user. I never advocate that actual cell phone numbers should be used by anyone for any reason whatsoever, because just the level of fraud that has been connected and associated with cell phone numbers. So going back to the financial institutions, if we're using those types of things while setting up online profiles or new accounts, it may be a red flag that would cause you to be declined as a new customer. Also, if you're using a privacy browser, it's just another, let's say, credit score. It's a score, a scoring system that is assigned to your application. So for everything that you put on an application when you're opening up a new bank account, a new credit account, everything is being assigned a score and it's being totaled up. And based upon that total score is going to decide whether or not you're going to be allowed to be a customer.
Yeah, that makes sense. They're assessing risk. And if you don't hit a certain minimum score, then it basically gets kicked over to a manual process then.
Correct.
Yeah.
That also occurs when people are trying to gain access to their own accounts. If they're not calling from the phone number that is associated with their account, it's going to escalate the number of authentications that are needed in order to verify that you are, in fact, who you are. If a fraudster is able to know enough information and provide that information at the onset, even before speaking to a human, they could pre-authenticate themselves and get through into your bank account much quicker.
Yeah, definitely. Have you heard the concept of reusable credentials? So Anonymy Labs is our parent company, and we've been looking into working on this in the markets of the financial industry, for instance, on coming up with something based on decentralized identity and something that's reusable so that you don't have to continue to authenticate yourself. Because, and it's been a while since I've gone into an actual branch, but I remember the last time I actually did, I was trying to do the drive-through, and it was nominal amount of money I was withdrawing, and they still just didn't like my signature. So they made me pull up, and I had to get out of the car, go into the branch, and prove that it was me. They still didn't like my signature. Right? I'm like, it's me. I'm like, this is, you know, it's a terrible customer experience. But I think beyond that, of course, most importantly, they're trying to prevent fraud. So I don't know if you heard anything about that concept. It's kind of like you think about TSA pre-check. You go into the airport, you've already been vetted out. They've gone through this full process. And so your screening is a little bit more streamlined than the average person, let's say.
Yes, I have experienced decentralized identity as it pertains to blockchain. I think it's a phenomenal way of authenticating who a person is, because using blockchain, there's only one instance of that appearing on the blockchain. And it's a way to ultimately have transparency and to prevent someone being able to hack your identity. I truly love that concept. I wish that would be expedited so it would be for use for everyone globally.
What's some typical frauds that you're seeing right now in the financial space, whether it's banking or crypto? I know is one of your favorites. What are some examples of what you're seeing?
I thought for some time that some of the old school ways of banking fraud were going to go away. I thought a lot of things were going to go towards the way of blockchain, which it is. There's a lot of adoption in cryptocurrencies, a lot of it in the fraud area, but in the mainstream, there's a lot of real life applications and uses for blockchain technology. But a lot of the old school fraud still exists. For example, check fraud. Check fraud is at an all-time high right now. I was in the bank just the other day depositing a very large check into our corporate account, and I was having a conversation with the banker about funds availability. And it's a lot different than before. You don't have to wait the 10 days for a check to clear. It's like next day, but we're still having a conversation about it. And it's like, well, the funds aren't available immediately because it has to go through the clearing process. Now, with individuals, it's different, but for businesses, there's at least a one-day hold period. And that's due to the amount of check fraud that is occurring. We go online. There's a lot of my colleagues that are on LinkedIn that are routinely showing forums on the dark web and on Telegram where they're stealing mail. I can't tell you how much just mailbox theft is occurring on a regular basis. People use the mailboxes in their neighborhood where they're all grouped together. I don't really see houses where they have individual mailboxes. Not that I would use those. I mean, I might also just put it out on the street curb, but a lot of people's mailboxes are being broken into. The fraudsters are stealing their identities, their checks, their financial information, and they're reusing them. It's a really low level of skill that is needed in order to create fake checks and cash them.
I can't remember the last time I saw somebody write a check.
Oh yeah, it's ongoing. Believe me, I had a case for a local client who they had their mailbox broken into. The suspect stole their driver's license that they were waiting for from the DMV. They then took some personal identifying information and account information that they had received potentially that was in the mail as well. And they went on a spree. They went on a spending spree all around town. They went to get payday loans. They walked into the bank without a debit card or credit card, any type of account documentation other than the driver's license. And they said, this is who I am, and I need to go ahead and make a withdrawal. And the ID, the photograph on the ID
really didn't even resemble the actual owner of that account, but he was able to pull out $1,000. And my clients had contacted the police department here in Fresno, and they're very great guys. I'm very close with the financial crimes unit. Shout out to Sergeant Van Overbeek over at the Fresno Police Department and his team. They're very, very great. Unfortunately, a lot of people nowadays are clamoring for defunding the police, for taking away valuable resources and funding to law enforcement agencies, not just in the United States, but worldwide. And this is an end result of that. When people who are in need of service from law enforcement come to them for that, they're turned away. There's just like my client was, I'm sorry, we can't help you. We have a very small team for a city of about approximately 1 million. The only thing that we can do is take a report. We encourage you to watch your credit reports, change your bank account numbers, and just monitor everything. And the clients were like, well, what do we do? And they said, well, if you like, you can hire a private investigator, this guy. So within 3 days, I was able to identify who this culprit was, because the same way that the criminals use information and resources that they obtain to defraud customers or people, I will use the same skills to find them. So never let it be said that this is a one-way street. It's a two-way street. The same skills that they are using to overcome security protocols, I'm using those same skills to find out where they hide, and I will expose them and I will find them, which is what happened.
Yeah, don't mess with Tom.
Yeah, don't mess with Tom.
What about the peer-to-peer payment system? So you've got apps like Zelle and Cash App and Venmo, and I'm hearing more fraud in that area. When I moved recently, initially when I agreed to the terms of the service, I was told that putting all my stuff on this 18-wheeler and having it cross state lines and everything, that I could make the final payment on, I think it was Zelle at the time, maybe. And then when I got there and everything was unloaded, they were like, no, we've changed our procedures because we've had a lot of fraud. So people would, I guess what happened was people were making their final payment supposedly through Zelle or whatever the P2P system was. And then they were canceling immediately after the moving people left. And so I don't know all the technical terms and how all this stuff works, but are you seeing any fraud in the area with peer-to-peer payments?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. P2P payments, they're one of the main sources of income for fraudsters, whether it's Zelle, whether it's Cash App, whether it's Venmo or PayPal. A lot of that is being used by fraudsters, especially when it comes to even cryptocurrency fraud. A lot of those different types of payments are being used. However, there had been a growing concern about victims not being able to get their monies back once they were stolen. So now regulations, laws have been changed to allow victims to be refunded for fraud through P2P apps like Venmo. Okay, before there wasn't a lot of reliability. You couldn't contact your bank and say, hey, I'm the victim of a scam. I sent $2,000 to this person using Zelle. Can I get my payment back? And then they try to put it off. Well, that's a third-party application, which was kind of disingenuous because that third-party application is owned by all of the banks collectively. A lot of the major banks own, I'm trying to remember the name of the company that owns that, but
I guess what concerns me is it's like a debit card, right? And I, to be honest with you, I don't think I've ever used a debit card to actually make a payment. I've used it a few times to withdraw cash, but I've always looked at a debit card as a fake credit card, because once, if you've been defrauded there, good luck trying to get your money back, right?
Yeah. There are ways, there are protections. A lot of the protections sometimes are based upon a victim being knowledgeable that they were defrauded in the first place. So let's say I'll use Home Depot as an example. Let's say that your customer information was breached in the Home Depot attack several years ago, and they got your debit card number. Okay, we know that a credit card number, you know, you have protections built into it, okay, for fraud. Debit cards, not so much, but depending on the financial institution that you have, they will allow you to dispute that. But you have to be knowledgeable that it took place. Sometimes these frauds are micro thefts, thefts of, let's say, less than $20, something that you generally might not even pay attention to. I recently saw one of my own accounts have a suspicious charge that was declined by Uber, and it was $0. And I didn't lose anything, but I started thinking, where is this coming from? I don't even have this card associated with Uber. So, you know, I immediately contacted the bank. I shut it down and got a new card number. However, that new card number also was, there was an attempt to debit from the account, but it wasn't successful because I had a lock on that card. But again, there's different tools that are available to different merchants where, let's say you have a subscription for a service online and you are using a card that's close to expiration, that merchant can opt in to one of the, to like either Visa or MasterCard, where if that card expires, it will automatically be provided with the new updated card information with the new expiration date, so it can be charged again. So fraudsters know about this. They know that they don't need to have the most current up-to-date information, but there's so many different layers of security that can be overcome if the fraudster knows what they're doing.
When it comes to financial fraud, are you seeing this being perpetrated mostly by organized crime, or are these typically lone wolves?
That's a very good question. There are international, transnational criminal organizations that are very proficient in financial frauds, but there are a lot of smaller criminal groups that are operating that are just as successful. But not any one person has all of the different skill sets that are necessary to conduct fraud. It's more of a team effort. It's more of a team effort where someone specializes in one or maybe a few different skill sets, and then they look to the dark web or to one of these different criminal groups that are actively recruiting or selling services on the dark web or on Telegram or on WhatsApp, and they outsource that. They outsource that and they work together as a team to achieve a goal. The goal is getting paid. And they're very, very good at that.
Yeah, I think before we start recording, you used the term fraud as a service.
Fraud as a service, yes. Yeah, you can easily go onto the dark web or you can go onto Telegram and you'll just see that people are actively selling these services. Tap in now. You want to get credit card numbers. You want to get fake IDs. You want to get access to accounts. You know, some of these are new accounts that are set up for the sole purpose of cashing out, for laundering money, for receiving money. Some of them are aged accounts that have been created for that purpose. Some of them are stolen accounts from different people that are unaware that their account has been compromised and is going to be utilized for fraud. The list goes on and on of the different type of services that you can find. You can find someone that can obtain information for you. Some people that will do the social engineering of financial institutions on your behalf. And with the advent of AI and deepfakes, we have threat actors from any part of the world that can use AI to make themselves appear to be American, British, Australian, a well-known individual, and use that information to talk to people. I think TikTok, the parent company of TikTok, which is a DanceByte, just came out with a new deepfake tool that will make a clone of a voice and the person will be able to use it in real time to talk to someone. So I could be, let's say Taylor Swift. I could be Taylor Swift and be talking to someone in real time and tell them how much I love them and thank you so much for being a fan. Would you like to contribute $10 to this charitable organization, which we will look out for young teen girls that are a Make-A-Wish Foundation? It's scary. It's really scary how fast technology is advancing in just the span of maybe 2 years.
Yeah. So I guess if you're in the financial industry and you're not involved in dark web monitoring, you're kind of behind, right? That should be really part of a sound cybersecurity strategy, is to make sure that you're constantly monitoring what's going on the dark web.
Ideally, yes. That would be one of the things that you will want to keep in mind to be secure and safe online. But it's actually much simpler than that. It's actually much, much simpler than that. One, you want to be able to use secure products that allow you to silo the different parts of your life. So that way, if any aspect of your life is breached, you know where it occurred. You can go in and cut it out like a cancer and not have to worry about that and move forward. Like with MySudo. MySudo provides a very great tool to help achieve that. You shouldn't be using your cell phone number for anything. You should be using privacy-centered products that allow you to have virtual numbers that are for different aspects of your life. One for personal, one for work, one for financial, one for junk, one for other purposes related, you know, one for rewards. You don't want to use the same phone number for everything. All you're doing is you're allowing the data brokers that you're providing your phone number and your email addresses to collect that information on you and sell it. Everything has a value now. And we as a people need to understand that and learn to interact with the world in a different way. We can't just go about the old way of just giving everybody everything that they absolutely ask for.
Yep, totally makes sense. Totally makes sense. Overall, when you think about the financial industry, you've been doing this for a long time, like I said, do you feel overall confident that it's still fairly pretty secure? It's just that the breaches that you see happening are not really expert hackers. They're just people that have committed identity fraud or identity theft, or like you said, they're basically just using social engineering tactics to get just enough information to be able to access someone's account. So it's more low end, right? It's not sophisticated, amazing hackers who've been doing this for 30 years that know all the ins and outs. It doesn't require that.
I'm going to say, and I know there's going to be colleagues of mine that disagree with me on this, a lot that may agree with me on, but I think it's at every different part of the spectrum. There's a lot of people on the low skill set part of the spectrum that don't have a lot of talent, that are resorting to old school ways of fraud that are proving to be successful. And a lot of it are, I call them crash test dummies. Okay. They learn about fraud the hard way through trial and error. A lot of that trial and error involves getting arrested and busted and realizing, oh, I did this wrong. Therefore, I won't do that again the next time. Or having other people go out there and be crash test dummies and get arrested. And then they learn from that mistake that person made, say, I won't have the next person go out there and do that. This time we'll use a phone number that verifies. Okay. Or maybe we'll have a better driver's license that doesn't look fake when they go into the bank to try to use it. On the other side of the spectrum, you have skilled hackers that are taking advantage of weak security protocols at companies and financial institutions and gaining access to a tremendous amount of data. We're talking in the millions of people's profiles of their accounts being compromised and resold on the web. Some of it is terribly simple. Experian, Brian Krebs, shout out to Brian Krebs for letting the world know about this. There was a lapse of security at Experian where a user can go and set up a new account to gain access to their own credit profile at Experian. And then when you get to the final stage where it would ask you to go through a series of questions, you could bypass that. I believe it was by changing it was something on the website where it would allow you to change the URL from false to true, and then your entire report would show up. It would show up. You didn't even have to go through an authentication. Just by changing the URL from false to true would provide a fraudster with the entire report. We're talking about Experian.
Wow.
World's largest credit bureau. Sometimes it's simple to achieve success in fraud. Sometimes there's degrees of difficulties. But everyone needs just to be aware. Don't take for granted your privacy.
Let's take a quick break for this message from our sponsor.
Picture this. You are a key decision maker at your credit union. Your tellers are tired of the lengthy KYC process, fraud is a constant worry, and onboarding new members feels like a marathon. But what if there was a way to streamline it all? Enter the Sudo platform. Our reusable credential technology transforms the traditional KYC process, reduces fraud, strengthens communication security, and streamlines member onboarding. With Sudo Platform, you can prevent fraud, save time, and create secure digital identities. And the best part? It's built right into your credit union's app. This is more than innovation. It's a commitment to providing your members a rewarding experience. We're live and ready to redefine how you do business. Don't wait. Give your credit union the upgrade it deserves. Identify any member in any channel at any time, all while improving convenience and reducing fraud. To learn more, contact us at sudoplatform.com. That's sudoplatform.com.
I was going to save this actually for a completely separate episode, but now that I'm thinking about it with you on here, maybe I'm thinking I would run this by you and see what you think. So I think it was in December. I'm not going to name the major airline, but it was a major airline. And I had a frequent flyer account with them. And just by luck, I had logged into this frequent flyer account within hours after somebody had stolen miles and used it to book a one-way trip from Paris, France to the capital of, it was an African country. I think it was Congo or, I can't even remember, honestly. But nonetheless, obviously it looked odd to begin with. I haven't been to Europe in 10 years, and here I am in Utah. And so there's a lot of weird things about this. When I got to the very end and I talked to the customer service people at this airline, they basically kind of acted like it was my fault, right? The email address that was associated with this frequent flyer account was, it's an old Gmail account, and honestly, stupid me, there's no 2FA on it. But I never got any email notifications that there was any activity going on from Gmail. So normally when somebody logs in from a different device, you'll still get a notification saying, hey,
ooh,
yeah,
ooh,
exactly.
Me teacher.
Yes.
I got an answer.
Yes, sir.
I want to give a shout out to Mike Bazell over at Intel Techniques for this tip.
Okay.
So with Gmail accounts, there was a Gmail account it was a client of Mike Bazell's that there was money being drained from that customer's bank account in very small increments over and over and over through, I believe it was PayPal. And they were trying to figure out how come they weren't notified? How come the emails that were supposed to have come to Gmail, how come they were not receiving those emails? Okay. And they attempted to go into PayPal, reset the password that was associated. Password reset was set to the Gmail and they weren't receiving it. They weren't receiving it. So they were still locked out of their own account. And they were trying to figure, how is it that these fraudsters are getting these emails? How come the customer still has access to the Gmail account? How are they not receiving this? It's in the settings. You go into the Gmail settings, okay, on the laptop. You go into the Gmail settings and you will find under one of those tabs, forwarding and the ability for someone to be logged in through IMAP. And you could set rules that will, for any all types of emails that come from, let's say, financial institutions, they will be forwarded to another address and then they will be deleted from the Gmail account. That way, the customers, that Gmail account holder is not receiving anything.
Yeah. But here's the thing. I did look at the settings. There was no email forwarding turned on. This is where it gets really interesting. So as far as I can tell, there was no email forwarding. They had probably gotten into my Gmail. And then again, this is an old account that goes back well over a decade, and I don't use it very much for anything. It's just happened to be that I've had this frequent flyer program. I've been a member of it for a long time. They had probably purchased the credentials off the dark web, I would imagine. That's how they got access. But then they went into my frequent flyer account. They changed the security questions. And they also changed my email address in my frequent flyer account. They just added like one letter to the end of my name. They just didn't want any notifications going to that email, but they couldn't care less. It was just a made up email address at that point. But it happened so fast. And this person, and I did look them up because they had to use, you've got to use your real name when you're flying, right? Or you will not, you will be denied boarding. It has to match your ID, or at least, you know, fake ID, whatever it might be. But when I looked it up, this person was studying for their MBA in some business school in Paris. And I'm like, there's something else I'm missing from this story, but they were able to do it last minute and book a ticket that night for the next day. Now I got my miles back. But there's something is still off about the whole story. And I don't know why I didn't get any kind of notification at all that somebody was logging in using a different device. But like I said, the first thing I did is I looked for the email forwarding and there was no evidence that that had been done. I don't know. It's a mystery.
Yeah. There's so many different products that companies provide to customers nowadays for using their products that have its benefits, that have rewards, credit cards and airlines. They have a lot of nice ways to reward customers for being customers. Frequent flyer mileage, that's a very big industry. It's also a very big industry that can be exploited and taken advantage of. You have to start to consider, what is your threat level? What is your personal threat level that is going to make you consider, do I want to utilize these types of products that are being offered to me? Is it worth it for me to provide or sign up for frequent flyer mileage if my privacy protocols are subpar? Are they subpar enough to where it exposes me to potential fraud at different levels? If I do want to take advantage of these things, you knowingly enter into this agreement with this company, knowing that there's a degree of security that can be overcome that you're going to have to actively monitor. So you have to properly assess, what is your threat level in life? I mean, if you have no concerns and you feel that you're always going to be reimbursed, then by all means, give them your cell phone number, give them only one email address that you can use everywhere. Eventually, it will be breached. It's not a matter of if, it's just a matter of when. Everything will be breached at some time. Everything can be breached. There's no surefire solution.
And the reason I bring that up too is because obviously these same techniques could be applied to hacking into banking accounts. But I've also heard stories recently that it's actually for these major airlines, it's more profitable from the credit card side, these relationships, these affiliations they have with the credit card companies, that it is selling seats on airlines, which I think is nuts. That's crazy. There's that much money in this.
It is. I am amazed at how profitable these things are. I wish I could just get a bigger seat, but it seems like the seats get smaller and more cramped.
Yeah. So yeah, it never ceases to amaze me how sophisticated some of these fraudsters are. It's like, wow, if you could just use that intelligence for something good. Like you are, yeah. Tom, right?
Yeah, I absolutely have to agree. Just like I said in the first podcast that we had together, once upon a time, a long time ago, I had a much different, more colorful life. Okay. I lived on the other side of the railroad tracks. Okay. Now I live on the side of right. Okay. With that said, the thrill, there's a certain amount of thrill, a certain amount of adrenaline, exhilaration that comes with committing fraud. And I routinely see people that I investigate hooked on this type of thrill, even if they're not making that much money. It's much more exciting to them than a boring life of working a 9-to-5 at Starbucks or at Walmart. People live for that excitement. Almost every single time I speak with a new client here in my office, they say, you know, they see that I'm a private investigator. If you walk into my office, you will see lined up on my wall a bunch of different costumes. And I'll show you afterwards, Rich, but I have a full Amazon Prime delivery costume, complete with the vest, the shorts, the hat, and a mask embroidered with Amazon in it. I have different couriers of FedEx, UPS, uniforms that allow me to blend into society when I'm doing surveillance. Okay. And, you know, people come in, they see this, they say, wow, you must have a very exciting job. And I tell them, absolutely, absolutely. I get to live out and be a real life Magnum PI. I get to go out and be a real, do all the exciting things that you could possibly think of. I have a cabinet, drawers full of the most sophisticated hacking tools that you could possibly imagine. I come up with the most crazy, insane scenarios to hunt down criminals and hackers and transnational criminal organizations. Have fun, but it's on both sides. But you are correct. If these people, these fraudsters, would use just a fraction of the energy that they were using to commit fraud and would apply that to preventing fraud, they could be just as successful. Cybersecurity is a growing, growing field, and there is a tremendous amount of demand for experienced professionals. Just because you didn't get it in a university or a school does not mean that is not applicable to the legitimate world.
Yeah. And when I think back again to my incidents here where somebody hacked into my frequent flyer account, stole miles, it's the individual can greatly affect the outcome of all of this, I guess, in a macro level, because if you're more vigilant about protecting your personal information, a lot of this stuff goes away.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I guess that's really the takeaway. So kind of bringing it back home again, some of the takeaways, what can people do, not necessarily to be the most extreme privacy person on planet Earth, but just some simple things. What can people do to just shore up a little bit of their data and kind of prevent some of those easy vulnerabilities?
I think the number one thing that I would do is be very vigilant, be very determined to not just give away your information. Every single thing about you, whether it's your phone number, your email address, your first name, last name, your address, everything is data that wants to be collected and sold by Google, by Apple, by all kinds of data brokers around the world. It is actively, you're searching the web, you're calling people, you're signing up for stuff. It's all being sold. Don't give it away. Is the price of that free gift a coupon, a reward? Is that really worth the headaches that you're going to go through later on when those companies become breached, when right. someone has stolen your identity? Okay, that would be my number one tip. Don't give away your information. Just don't do it. All right. Two would be to freeze all your credit reports. If you're not actively looking to get new credit, freeze it. Freeze it. So that way no one else can use it. It's not foolproof because of a lot of credit bureaus. It's easy to unfreeze it, but you have to know how to. Most fraudsters, like I said, they're crash test dummies. They don't know how to unfreeze those things and quickly. You want to put layers of security. Okay. Three, start using privacy focused tools and apps. So whether you're using a secure browser, Brave browser, or you're using MySudo has a great built-in browser for each of its sudos. Along with that, you want to use privacy-focused email addresses. We use MySudo for emails. We also use Simple Login. You have aliases instead of using reusable email addresses. Use single disposable email addresses that then go to a main email that you're using. So that way you can identify when something has been breached and you can dispose of that. Okay. Phone numbers, same thing too. Again, MySudo, where I am a fanboy for MySudo, it's a phenomenal product and it's a very easy product to use. We just have to start using these things. We have to overcome our hesitation in adding different layers of security. Make it easy, make it a part of your everyday routine until it becomes second nature.
And when it comes to two-factor authentication, do you have a preferred method for employing that, whether it's an authenticator app or through email?
I choose multi-factor authentication. I try to use as many different layers of multi-factor authentication when it is available, depending on the product that I'm using. If it's a financial institution, I want to check at what level can I use multi-factor authentication? Can I use a passkey, which is secure? Can I use an authentication app, which is also secure? They're not foolproof because there's always ways to bypass that. If I can't get into an account electronically, then maybe I can get in through the phone. Okay, so now we go to the phone. We ask the customer service, what layers of security are they using to secure my account by phone? Okay, I want to make sure that I can add a password, a passphrase, something that's secure, something that is going to also be unique and not used every different financial institution. I'm not going to use the name of my dog, Sparky, at every single financial institution. It's going to be something that's very long that doesn't make sense to nobody. I might even get a laugh, I'm lucky, out of the customer service representative when they hear what it is. And they say, don't worry about that. That's just my passphrase that I'm using, so nobody else has that.
Have you looked into these little devices like YubiKeys, the little hardware Yes. authentication device? Do you have any opinions on those?
They're very secure. They're very highly regarded. I use them. I do have a YubiKey. Getting the broader public to be able to use that is more of a challenge. What happens if you use that YubiKey? Sometimes my wife can't even find her keys. And sometimes I can't even find my keys. You know, what am I going to do if I lose access to that? For that fact, what happens if I lose my phone that has my authentication codes on there? I mean, I remember one time many moons ago, I think I left my phone at a store accidentally and I was on my way home and I panicked because my entire life was on that phone. I was like, oh my God, if I lose that phone, there is everything on there. There goes Dark Horse. There goes my bank accounts. All I could see in my mind was my wife yelling at me. And fortunately, there was a good person at that store who did hold on that phone for me. It was not compromised. And I learned from that event. And I try to be very diligent. Although sometimes I'm just like the broader public. I'm not always 100% successful at being secure in everything that I do. I do sometimes, I am lazy about security. It's not a sprint, it's a marathon, okay? There is no ultimate goal, a finish line. It's a marathon. You have to continually be updating. You have to continually be reviewing. You have to continually be implementing new, stronger privacy protocols so that way you're safe. There's always going to be some measure of vulnerability that we can be exposed to. With every new technology, there's also going to be a new technology to overcome that. And criminals are looking for that. They're always probing. They're always attacking.
I guess as we get close to wrapping up here, one question I always like to ask is, how do you overcome the challenge of getting more of a mainstream audience, you know, this wider market? We call them normies, if you will. How do you get them more interested in being proactive about protecting their personally identifiable information? A lot of times it seems like something bad has to happen and then there's a wake-up call, but I would hate for it to get to that point. Have you found a way to get through to people so that they do become more proactive, if possible?
You have to make it fun. You have to make it entertaining. Just like this podcast, you don't want to be very straightforward. There's so many DEF CONs that I have witnessed, have watched, and the speaker goes up there and he's not entertaining at all. I mean, the information that he's sharing is great, but if you're not presenting it in a way where it's going to make somebody laugh, where it's going to make somebody excited, or their jaw's not going to drop.
In other words, don't try to scare them.
Well, not just you don't want to scare them, you have to be engaging. Shout out to IRL Rosie. If anyone is watching, check out IRL Rosie. She likes to take down scammers using a variety of fun tactics. She will do like me. When social engineering people, she will impersonate other people and take up these scammers' time and upset them. So for example, if I'm social engineering somebody and I want to have a little bit of fun, I might implement an old man routine. Hello. Yes, I'm looking for Mr. Richard Sardal. Yes, Mr. Sardal, I was told to contact you in regards to my account. Perhaps you can help me. One of those things, you have to, everything is about short attention spans. You only got so much time to gain the attention of someone. Use it effectively. If eyeballs are going to be on you for 10 seconds, 30 seconds, 5 minutes, 1 hour, you have to make your content engaging, exciting, fun. And during that time, you'll be able to sell your product to them. Maybe you'll be able to impart some wisdom that they'll continually watch you over and over again. If they're continually watching you over and over again, some of that information that you're providing to them is going to stay in their brain. They're going to say, oh, maybe I shouldn't be using my same phone number. That guy Rich keeps telling me I shouldn't use the same phone number for everything. I should use their clever app that will help me segregate different aspects of my life. You got to hammer it in repeatedly, 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 and make it fun. Everything can be fun if you want it to be.
Yeah, it is true. It's not good enough just to have the information. You have to present it in a way that's entertaining. It's always true. It doesn't matter what the topic is, right? There is always an element of entertainment that is necessary to keep people engaged and to help that learning process, like you said.
Yeah. Maybe the FTC should hire us. The FTC, and we could just take over their podcast, and we could just create a podcast for them, and we can just give government information, best practices to the public on behalf of the government. Make it fun, make it engaging.
It's interesting too, how comedy is an effective tool actually to educate people. A lot of people do get lessons from comedy.
Yes.
I find that fascinating.
Oh my God. Before we go, I want to tell you about one thing that I always go back to. So it's not the Tonight Show. It was,
Jimmy Kimmel.
Jimmy Kimmel. Yeah. Jimmy Kimmel has a couple great skits where they have someone out in the street talking to people in front that are passing by about passwords. Hi, we're talking today about passwords. What's your password? And people just start randomly telling what their password is. Yeah, we're checking on the strength of your passwords. Would you mind talking to us about that? And oh my God, it is so hilarious. But it goes to show how easily people are willing to provide personal identifying information about themselves if it's to the right person, if it's done in a way where you allow yourself to be social engineered. But it's great. I would love to do that. I may do that based upon this conversation. I might just go out today on the street with a camera and start asking people for their passwords.
This is one of the most entertaining tactics I've ever seen employed on those shows, is the kind of the man on the street, if you will, just trying to gauge what people's general overall understanding of an issue is, or geography or whatever it might be. That's a good one.
It is.
I think you got yourself a good idea there. Tom, this has been amazing. Anything else you want to cover before we go?
Yes. If you are ever in need of true excellence in investigations, please visit darkhorseintel.com. We will be glad to provide you with the highest caliber of investigative services possible. Thanks, Rich. I really appreciate being on the show again.
Yeah, Dark Horse Intelligence. You are in the Fresno area?
Yes, we are a California licensed private investigation agency.
Great. Yeah, that's awesome. And I have no doubt you do amazing work. It's always entertaining to talk to you. And I've learned a lot more today. So thank you so much, Tom.
No, it's my pleasure. Thanks a lot, Rich. And shout out to everyone over there at Anonymy Labs.
Thank you. I appreciate it. You take care, Tom.
All right. You too. We'll see you soon.
Well, that's going to do it for this episode of Privacy Files. In our next episode, we'll be talking to Kristen Jackson, co-founder and president of Freespoke, a privacy-minded search engine that aims to deliver unbiased search results. Until next time, don't forget, privacy is a human right.